All right, good evening, everyone. This is Gordon W2, Tango, Tango, Tango. And this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. This net is conducted weekly on a frequency of 146.955, repeater of the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club in Alpine, New Jersey. At this time, is there any emergency or priority traffic? Please call KQBAR. Okay, good answer. Okay, this net is conducted weekly for the purpose of having a conversation. We call it the technical net because it's about amateur radio, telecommunications, electronics, computers, natural phenomena that support those things. It's about how we operate. It's about a lot of things, what we do and how we do it. So hopefully you'll participate. There's a couple of different ways to participate. You have a question, a comment, or neither. We need you to participate even if you have neither a question or a comment. We don't know you're there, then we can't ask you a question, which we might do. Remember, this is a conversation. This begins our sixth year on the TechNet. It was originally patterned after the K2RIW TechNet on 146.85 on Sunday night. But we decided to keep it a little more down-to-earth, practical. We don't have 3 to 4 hours to do this. We have an hour, maybe two, beyond people's ability to stay up on a work night. So, you know, naturally, we'd like to try to make it meaningful. So we've had many great nets over the years. Find our nets on tape, starting with net 4 on amateurradio.tv. We'll see one of the nets that's recorded there is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net, starting with our fourth session way back 5 years ago. So, you can always review those. Some of them, I'm sad to say, I sounded very tired. Some of them just didn't work out very well, but many, 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 the vast majority worked out awesomely well. People have gone out and tried things, they've verified things, they've communicated things, inspiring other people to do stuff. It's just awesome. So we hope that you will, again, participate, even if you don't have a question or a comment, just by simply checking in. All right, with that, no further ado, stations whose call signs begin with the letter alpha, please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name. Indicate whether you have a question, a comment, both, or none of the above. Please call K2BAR. Okie dokie, nothing heard. Stations whose call signs begin with the letter whiskey, please call K2BAR.
W2JEK, Devon, one comment.
Stephen Donald, with one comment. Excellent. Any other whiskeys?
WE2R, Charlie, and no questions or comments.
Stephen Charlie. Any other whiskeys?
W2LCN, name is Rick. No questions, no comments.
Good evening, Rick. Come aboard. Got a little crackle on you, but you're there. Any other whiskeys? Alrighty. How about those ever-popular Kilo 2s? Three. I have not heard any Kilo 2s. Any other Kilos?
This is KC2TBD. Ron, good evening. I have no comments and no questions.
Good evening, Ron. Thank you for participating. Any other Kilos? How about the ever-popular November?
This is NS2K. No traffic at this point.
Evening, James. Very, very good. Any other Novembers? Alrighty. Any other stations checking in later? Okie doke. Alrighty. Well, we have one comment for the net, a little sparse tonight. We'll see what we can do. Mr. Don, your comment.
K2BAR and the net W2JEK, good evening, everybody. Just a reminder, our next VE test session that Barrow will be holding will be on April 20th. That's a Friday night, April 20th. That'll be at 7 o'clock at the Westwood Regional High School. And a reminder to those that are studying for the extra exam, we will be having a new set of questions and question pool as of July 1st. So if you're studying the current material now, please make it a point to get to a test session before the end of June. Otherwise, you're going to have to get the whole new, start all studying all over again with the new material. That is for this time around. Unless anybody has any questions for me, I'll turn it back to Ned.
Questions for Don? All righty. Very good. That we heard? Then Don, people will take your words to the wise, and we'll go from there. Another announcement that we have is that Boy Scout Troop 39 and Troop 7373 Hamfest will be the Saturday after Easter, on April 14th in Bergen Field. A couple of technical presentations, one on digital modes in a very practical way. It's not going to be what you're normally expecting to see. And the other is on emergency communications preparedness. So that should be interesting as well. The other thing, of course, is that there'll be awesome food, and you'll be able to get your car washed if you're outside, if you want, during the hamfest, which is kind of cool. So hopefully you'll bring your goodies. A lot of people are starting to contact me about that. Now, are there any questions about these upcoming events? Alrighty. Well, next subject tonight is... Actually, before I go to the next subject, let me see if there are any further check-ins. Please call K2BAR.
K2BAR. KT2KX.
I'm sorry, who was that station who just checked in? W2TTC.
W2TTC, it's Vinny, KC2KXV Mobile.
Hey, Benny. Not Benny, I'm good. Vinny. a friend of mine just called, another friend of mine just called me. Very good. Good hearing you, Vinny. We don't hear you often enough. You're a good guy. Excellent. Well, you're here on the inaugural NAT of our sixth year, which is kind of cool. So congratulations on being part of this momentous occasion. Do you have any questions or comments for the NAT?
Good. I'm pretty sure North has been in and out for a while. I'll listen until I get better propagation, but nice to hear those great events coming up, especially Bergen Field, so I can drop by. And great to be on tonight.
Excellent, excellent. Okay. Very good. Just a reminder for everybody that we have the Split Rock Ham Fest this Saturday also in Sukasana. So that's something else to keep in mind. Another upcoming Ham Fest. Of course, ours is in May. The Barra Ham Fest is in May on, I believe, Memorial Day weekend on Saturday. So that's kind of cool, too. So we've got one this month. We have another one this month. We have at least one next month and one in May that I know of. So that's kind of nice. It's getting to be that wonderful Ham Fest season. All righty. Anybody have any questions, comments, confusions about all this?
I have a different question.
To OEL, welcome aboard.
I couldn't miss your sixth-year continuous running. This is into OEL.
I'm sorry, Noel, did you have a question or comment for the net?
Yes, I have a question.
Then fire away, my friend.
The question is about RF chokes. In the typical ham station, where you're running... not a big amplifier, you know, like an SB-1000. What radar occurrence be of concern? You know, like the Flex Radio or TS-50 or IC-740, any of those regular reds, even if I, the old ancient 530 with a tube output and with TS-530. Should a person, as a matter of course, putting in chokes or something to break up the current coming down the external coax, such as the radio works coaxial, basically a piece of coax in a tube with ferrites on it, or you can go to Palomar, P-A-L-O-M-A-R website. They have some very nice ones to go over LMR 400 or RG-8. Or you can do an ugly bomb, B-A-L-U-M, which is basically 18, 21 feet wound on a... Some people use a 2-liter bottle, some people use a 4-inch pipe. Do any of those things recommended? Are they necessary?
Well, let's talk about that. Are they necessary? And the answer is a definitive maybe. If you have a properly matched antenna with no coupling back onto the sheath, then conceivably, yeah, you don't need it. However, let's think about this. You have one conductor larger than the other. So right off the bat, you have an imbalance. So that means more current's going to go to one side of, let's say, of a dipole than the other. So in that case, something to balance that out would be a good thing. So, yeah, you could certainly do it for balancing. You could also do it for making sure that RF doesn't float back down and into your shack. All good things to think about.
Well, you know, I have that beam. It's only 5 feet over my roof. And then I'm going to be in the middle of the loop antenna, the 80-meter loop. And about 8 feet from the beam is the end of my 40-meter Carolina Windham.
Well, yeah, I mean, another good point. And let me give you the other side of it, too. If, perchance, you're concerned about RF getting on the outside right from the transmitter for whatever reason, let's say you don't have a good ground, things like, you know, people with, like me with second floor or third floor ham shacks, having spinning up those coaxes or putting a ferrite bead ring on your feed line coming out of your transmitter is another way of keeping RF from being radiated by your feed line on the outside. That's never good either. So, yeah, there's a lot of great reasons for doing this. And, help. There's a little bit of black art. There's no specific, take it to the bank rule that says where the stray RF is being induced, because there's so many different configurations. But it's not a bad thing to choke the RF coming out of the, choke the stray RF coming out of the transmitter or out of the amplifier, and it's not a bad thing to make sure that what goes into the radiator up top is properly balanced or imbalanced as a function of what you're doing. If you're using a balanced element like a dipole or a dipole-driven element or some sort of half-wave thingy or multi-wave thingy, yeah, I think you want to make sure that you induce currents in a balanced mode, in which case putting a ballon up there is a great thing. And if there's high SWR, all the more reason. Anybody else have any comments on this? Check in. Is that Mr. K2ZO?
Let me just untangle something. Okay. This is K2ZO checking in. I have not been monitoring the net.
Okay. Well, we're going to have Noel repeat his question. I'm sure you have some thoughts on it, too. We're just talking about reasons for using various chokes, either at the transmitter or on the feed line near the radiating element. Different reasons for having both, and you might have some insights to that. So, your thoughts, Jim?
My question.
You're talking about a line isolator. I guess I use a line isolator on the window
right as the coax comes out. That's going up to the open wire bed, off-center bed antenna. And of course, I also have a ballon. So I go up to a ballon. I go out of the isolator, and then a few feet later, I go to a ballon. It's a little added extra protection, and was needed if I ran some power.
I think I should have prompted Noel properly to do that, but you got the gist of the question and the answer. Noel, do you have any follow-up?
Well, actually, he's building one for me. The explanation was we went to Limebark, and if your coax lead, the varied bead is big enough, and your coax is high enough quality and small enough, instead of just running it through once, you do and put a second turn through, which increases the inductance by a factor of 4. This is the explanation I'm understanding. I'm repeating what I was told. So therefore, the bead now has the effect of 4 beads.
True. Okay, Jim, any further comments on Noel's comment?
Well, I happen to have a line oscillator made by DX Engineering, and what it uses is the sleeve-type things, ferrites, but uses thinner coax so you can lace it through, and I kind of made a Chinese copy of it. Noel, I didn't finish it up. I got to put the connectors on it. I'll do that as soon as I can. I've been amiss on that. But that works quite well. And if you look at it, I'm using RG-303 or RG-400. And you can get two turns through a half-inch diameter bead that's about an inch and a half long. So now you've got two turns, and remember the square law. So if you, it isn't doubled, it's squared as far as the inductance goes. So what happens is that it's becoming far more efficient. So you go through, rather than just run a piece of coax straight on through, you loop through and come back, so you've got two turns.
That's right. Square, not the not double. All righty. Mr. Noel, actually, before I say as well, anybody else have any more questions? Or say comments about this question, I should say. Okay. Well, like Jim. I use long isolator on some of my antenna leads going out, primarily because I don't want to have any issues with stray RF floating around. Like you, Noel, I have a radiated element. One of them is, my 10-meter vertical and my 8040 trap dipole are right over my ham shack, basically. And, in fact, the 10-meter antenna is right above the corner of my office. The radials are across my ceiling. They're literally 6 feet from my head in some cases. So I'm 10 meters, so that can be kind of interesting too. Well, maybe a little more than that, maybe 10 to 15 feet, but not by much. In any case, reducing stray RF is a good thing. I'll leave it at that. Anyway, Noel, back to you at 2OL, KTBAR.
Now we know the explanation of why sometimes you talk funny. KTBAR at 2OL.
Why is that?
Stray RF.
Oh, is that it? I didn't realize that affected the cranium in such a perceptible, immediate mode.
I think those cell phones did that.
Well, maybe not. Anyway. Ah, dear me, dear me. All righty. Noel, anything else?
No, I'm fine. The only thing that I really need to do is teach Carlos how to solder. Got my shack pretty much cleaned up. There is a very, very nice connector that Mr. Joyce actually took to Kidnight, I believe, to show Steve, WIQW. It actually works for, it's a right angle connector or a PL259 right angle or a straight. They're very nicely made, and their compression for everything except the center conductor, that you just do a little bit of soldering at the tip. And since I'm one of the world's worst solderers, I have a few of those. I also found out that the same website in China is now selling one that fits RG58. And I just bought 10 of them. Because I'm the world's worst solderer. I cannot do the shields to the PL259 or these adapters or anything worth a darn. So, it actually looks pretty good. And Mr. Joyce has them probably in availability. He can reach out and touch them and tell you about them. Well, yeah.
Mr. Joyce, do you want to say something?
Well, they're very nice connectors. Made in China. And they don't require you to solder the braid. It has a clamp arrangement on there. It clamps down on the braid. So the only thing you have to solder is the center conductor. And they are pretty nice. I just showed them the other night, the kit night, and I do have them for you, Noel. I have them in the bag, as well as that other stuff from Steve. But, why don't you, do you have that website where that guy sells those things, Noel? Maybe you could pass that on. Those are very unique connectors. Back to that.
I will sign on to eBay right now and find the username for the seller's name.
Yeah, that would certainly be useful. Okay, why don't we move on while we wait for this resource to appear. Let's see. Anybody else want to check in or make a comment or add a question?
W2JC, none of the above, over.
W2JC. Good evening, James. Alrighty. By the way, I'm not sure, but I'm going to take a quick moment of personal privilege here. This is our first net of our sixth year. And as I indicated in the introduction, starting with the fourth net, we had recordings that are made and referenceable on the www.amateurradio.tv as the television website. So if you're interested in hearing that, you hear old nets. What's interesting is if you listen to the either first or second recording, it references that it's the fourth net. So cycling back, it would make last week's net the end of the fifth year and this the beginning of the sixth year, if I did the math correctly. So that's pretty cool. At that time, I believe our check-ins included W2JEK, WE2R, NS2K, N2OEL, K2ZO, and yours truly, W2TTT. It included others as well, but it's interesting. I think I'm almost certain everybody there either was on the first net or are starting very, very early. I thought that's marvelous that we've had this group for now half a decade. And over time, people have stepped up and covered the net for me when I've had personal conflicts, family responsibilities, and things like that. I really do appreciate and want to thank everybody for both their participation and also their leadership when that's been necessary. Further, I'd like to just emphasize that in many ways, their participation is another reflection on their capacity for leadership and demonstrable willingness to share their God-given gifts and, you know, kind of work through the spirit of amateur radio and be emblematic of that. So I called out several people. Several of you who I did not call out who are here are also emblematic of that quality, as are people who are not here with us tonight. We're very, very blessed to have this community. So, again, as we start our sixth year, I want to thank everybody for participating in any way they have over the last half decade. Do we have any additional questions or comments at this time?
K2ETN, I have a question.
Andy, our humble trustee, go right ahead.
This is for Jim. I've worked with chokes and things a lot, like everybody here, I guess. And I tried one time, I was trying to make a transformer raiser low on each foot. And I bumped into some problems because every, when I would increase the number of turns on the board I was working with, it didn't seem to make a whole lot of difference. I talked to Ferox Cube at some length on that subject. And apparently, ferrite chokes do not get their choking ability by way of inductance. They are very lossy at high frequencies. And that's why they act as a, what do you call it, blocking RF or whatever. But I think, Jim, I think you've worked with ferrites a bit. Have you heard that explanation of their properties?
Yeah, I have the Jerry Sevick's book right here with all the info. Yeah, however, we're not doing that. We're just using the thing to choke off the outside currents on a piece of coax. So you don't have to be as careful. Basically, the idea is you use a piece of thin coax. Now, this coax is the size of RG58. However, it'll handle a couple of thousand watts because it's all Teflon, RG303 or RG141. That's what they use in these commercial bounds that are made this way. And all I did was copy the DX Engineering $85 job for a total of four beads, which were $4 a piece. And the piece of coax that I had. And, of course, it works. It does reduce the RF coming back. But, yeah, you got to be careful when you start doing other things. You have to be very careful. And, as I say, I've got the book here, and he does point that out. Back to that, K2ZO.
Okay. Well, I've fooled around with that a bit when I first heard about it. I was sort of surprised at it, but it definitely is not the same as a transformer core. Iron is better for that. By the way, that's RG91, I think, that you're talking about, isn't it?
Well, there are a couple of RG that are down there. One of them is the RG400. RG400 has got a flexible center conductor. And that's the standard in the aircraft industry. Very expensive stuff, $4 a foot. You could put like 6,000 watts through it at 30 megahertz, according to the specs anyway. So the idea is that you can now take a piece of RGA coax, go up to this thing that's a thin piece of coax, put the thinner beads on it, or loop it through the beads a number of times, and that's the whole idea. The other one is RG303, which is about the same, slightly smaller in diameter, and I think there's a number of others. I know RG141 and RG142, one of them having a solid center, but I don't remember which. But all of them are very expensive because they're Teflon.
Yeah, I have quite a bit of the Teflon. I'm not sure what the number is, what the RG number is. It's all Teflon, and it's about the size of RG58, maybe a little bit smaller than that. If you need some, I'd love to.
Okay, we might take you up on a couple of feet of it.
Got your answer.
Thanks. thank you for the break. I'll go back in listening mode here.
You know, we're going to have to put a tax on you for not checking in for all this time and lurking almost all the time. Well, I don't know, Andy. I guess it's the price of admission when you have the trustee. You have to kind of cut the trustee some slack. Hi, hi. All righty. Anybody else have any questions or comments?
I have the answer to the question about where to buy these things.
Go right ahead.
Okay, it's on eBay. The seller is M-A-Y-A dot Y-O-O-Y-O-O. Hong Kong. On the right angle plug, I bought him for about $3. He's now up to $4.99. We must have swelled his head with the his free shipping, with the comments of how great it is. The straight one, the UHF to the LMR 400. So, what you can do is you type in UHF PL 259 LMR 400 as your search term. When you hit the right one, it's got, they show you how it comes apart. And the most striking thing about it is this nice little red, I'm not sure, butyl rubber, neoprene, the part that expands when you squeeze it down. It actually has, you know how LMR 400, you can't solder to the stuff. It has a metal sleeve out of aluminum that goes in, so there's no dissimilar metal. It slides under the outer jacket and over the braid and makes a really good contact. And the braid, now you actually can make it a little bit longer and it'll actually go under and, you know, you can expand it. So, and when you squeeze this thing down, it holds it tight. It is really good quality. This one was, for the straight PL-259, it's now $3.33 with free shipping. Just go on eBay, you'll see. He's got a couple different ones.
I love the seller name, Maya.UU. That's just wrong. So you paid how much for these things, and now he's up to $4.95?
Another guy that's selling the same thing, LM4871N, as in Nancy. LM4871N, as in Nancy, who's got some of the information in Chinese, but it's $2.75 with $1 shipping for up to six. So you, if you put six in, you get dollar shipping for six. So it's $2.75 plus a dollar. What I originally had bought him, I forgot the guy, Jim knows, we'd go to coffee. The guy that used to land helicopters in Richfield Park. He had a teleport there, ran a helicopter service. Anyways, he's the one that originally told us about it. I bought him. Go to this other guy. You'll see the right angle one. Really nicely made, well made.
It's really good. Tell me how, you said there's some sort of crimping kind of thing that goes on to hold, to grab the shield. So how does that work?
Why don't we let the expert tell us? Jim!
I'm not an expert. Remember, I'm the guy that tried to solder LMR 400. this thing will work on RG8, also RG213 and 214. What is 214? Is that 75-ohm? I've got a roll of it here. I don't know why I do, but I do. Anyway, the way this thing works is you tighten down. It's like, you know, compression fitting that's on, like, in the connectors for RG58 or stuff like that. And when you tighten down on it, it grabs the shield and does a job on it. I don't know how these things would be out in the weather. I don't know. You'd want to make sure you weatherproof that portion. But it's certainly a very, very nice way to do it and put it together. It makes it a lot easier. And I have a question. Is LMR 400 slightly different in diameter than RG8? I think it is. Back to that, K2ZO.
It absolutely is. LMR 400 is 400 thousandths of an inch. RG8 is slightly different. I think it might be 0.375. There's a difference in the center pins even. In fact, I have here, someone gave me an end connector, or a set of end connectors, and one of the ham vendors actually had ripped open the Amphenol packaging and replaced every center pin for LMR, I think it was our LMR 400. I think that's what they had. So it had a slightly different center pin.
Now that's what I remember. I remember soldering the center conductor, which was multiple, on a piece of coax, and then filing it down to fit in that stupid center pin.
That's correct. So what I think the wireman or one of these others had, made arrangements to have a larger aperture on the back end of that connector pin milled out. That it hasn't specially made. I believe, I'm not absolutely certain, I seem to remember RG214 is 50 ohm but double shielded.
Okay, I have to go take a look at that thing. And RG213 I think has a solid center conductor.
Yeah, alright, I'm looking here, just pulled it up. 214 is double braided, and the center conductor is stranded. I think 213 is more like LMR 400, where it's solid. A lot of people like to use LMR 400, and if you're not careful, and you're busy with your rotator, you could end up snapping that coax over time. So what I recommend doing, if you're going to use any of these solid center conductor coaxes, is put about four, better yet, six turns of that coax, above and below, between the rotator, above and below the rotator, so there's plenty of places for that cable to flex, and kind of angle it in the direction that it's going to be supported on the takeoff angle into the spiral, and I think you'll be better off. Works really well. I've done that on a 6 meter and a 2 meter antenna and a 220 antenna out here in the backyard for 7 years, and I've not had any problem.
I just used 15 foot of Berryflex by Davis, and then since I put the lightning arrestor inside the attic, strapped to the pipe, which is rounded, the antenna so far pipe, I just simply didn't worry about it, and on the other side it comes with the LMR 400, so I got most of the run through LMR 400, but the top part is very flexible.
Yeah, that's a good idea. By the way, just for reference, among other places, if you need to look up a particular coax, the universalradio.com, universal-radio.com site is wonderful because you can enter a cable part number, and it actually will tell you everything you need to know mechanically, and also power capability as a function of frequency, and of course the attenuation as a function of frequency. So it's actually a marvelous website. I mean, there are other places that have good stuff too, but this is, if you want a quick look up, Universal Radio's website is particularly wonderful. They also have a comparison table. If you look up any one of them, they have a comparison table for a variety of popular coaxes. That's particularly nice. It's color-coded, things like that. I use a lot of LMR 400, to say the least. I like it. I realize you use the Flex, Noel, but I just didn't want to have yet more connectors out there. And so, a little distance doesn't isn't troublesome to me, and it makes it easier to work through. You don't have any coax connectors to maintain in the field, except at the antenna connector, at the antenna itself. Anyway, anybody have any comments?
When the connections are inside the attic, that's not a problem.
See, now you're bragging that you got that point. Anybody else? Alrighty, any other check-ins for the net?
Am I a long-time listener, but not a check-in tonight? But no comments.
Hey, Tony, I thought you'd want to be involved in this. You're another one who came to the first net 6 years ago. So thank you again for your participation over the years. And again tonight. Very good. Alrighty. I heard another station underneath, Tony. Who was that?
Pardon, double waited. This is KD2AAE. I was just listening out here in Tenafly, New Jersey. Your name here is Sean. Over.
Kilo Delta 2 Alpha Alpha Echo, is that it, Sean?
Correct, Gordon.
I thought so. Welcome aboard. Good to hear you again. We're beginning our sixth year this year, or this night. This is pretty cool. One of the things I can suggest people do, and I know it's kind of weary-worn, but we've had unusually good weather. And I think it would probably be appropriate for folks to think about getting their go kits ready to go and, you know, maybe replenishing things in the car. Start thinking about what you need, what supplies you've had in the car for winter that, you know, you might need something different in the summer. Replenishing things. Take the breakfast bars or whatever, energy bars, whatever you have in your go kit. Consume them and replace them by fresh stock, things like that. Maybe even replace them with water, because after a while it gets a little stanky. It's factory, you know, even if it's factory bottled, it gets kind of ugly after a while. It tastes a little foul and sitting too long. Things like that. And of course, like Bob likes to tell us, charge your batteries. Also check out your equipment. Make sure the equipment actually works. Make sure that your battery is discharged properly to recharge. Charge them again, maybe. Something to think about. Any other comments, questions, or consider that?
Well, I got a different one about batteries.
Yeah, sir.
Okay. I brought the batteries to Kid Night. Not actually coffee, I'm sorry. They claim that they have a 7-year shelf life. They say that when you get them from the factory, do not charge them. They claim you could charge them up to 400 times. They're pre-charged, and they're 1.5 volts. They're 2,000 milliamp, and they're alkaline. And the charger, which will charge 4 batteries at one time, says it'll charge any rechargeable. It claims that the voltage when it charges these batteries is 1.6 charging volts. When it charges a NiCad or nickel metal hydride, it says that the charging voltage is 1.4, and it'll do 4 AAAs or 4 AAs. And the brand name is the letter I, a small I, a large G, O. So it's IGO Green, G-R-E-E-N. And you imagine, and it's www.igo.com.
That's an interesting resource. A battery that comes pre-charged has a shelf life of 7 years, and you can recharge it 400 times. How inexpensive are they? I mean, for let's say a double A cell.
You bought them at Woot, out of Woot off.
Okay. Well, and these are nickel metal hydrides?
Alkaline.
And you can charge these up. They're rechargeable alkalines, huh?
Yes. Tony has 10 of them, or he has 8, and about to get 2 more. We're putting them in our MSJ-259s. I don't know about you, but I use the thing once in a blue moon, and when I use it, I like to use it. So, you know, it's kind of like terrible to have the regular outline sitting there. So these, if it gets low, I'll charge them up or if I'm about to use it. But they claim 2,000 milliamp hour capacity. They claim up to 7 years, and we were sitting there laughing saying, up to 7 years, huh?
Marvelous, that's marvelous. Okay. Anybody have any follow-on questions?
Okay, to Dan again.
Me, go ahead.
If you are interested in batteries that have either the long shelf life, very high discharge currents, and things like that, take a look at the hobby industry, model airplanes and model rockets and things like that. They seem to get the leading edge in the battery technology. Lithium batteries, as you know, have a 15-year shelf life, and they have now a iron battery, which has even higher discharge currents than nickel poly. My son is very much involved in model or airplanes and stuff like that, and he's always coming up with these unbelievable batteries that are available, and they are just their hobby industry.
That's a good thing to note. Yeah, absolutely. Of course, lithium ion and some of these other more exotic metal batteries require special charging considerations. They make NiCads and nickel metal hydrides look very, very straightforward. But it's not unusual for a lithium ion pack to have one cable to discharge the pack and another cable to charge it in order to keep all the cells in balance. They actually have special circuitry that's built into the pack to actually charge the cells and make sure everything stays in balance. Alrighty. Anybody else? Any other topics? Alrighty. Well, again, Tony, I was thanking a lot of the guys who've been there since year one. We're now starting year six, and thank you for being one of those guys from year one. Anyway, I'm going to, at this time, put out a last call for anyone who wants to check in, any last questions, any last comments, and we'll go from there.
And this is Noel. The answer to the previous question is about $2 a battery. Four batteries, charger, $13. That's the list price on the website. And to oil.
Thank you, Noel. Was there someone who doubled underneath you?
Alpha Juliet 4, Whiskey Delta Mobile, Rachel.
Okay, welcome aboard, Rachel. Good hearing you. Did you have anything you wanted to add to the net as we complete our first session of our sixth year?
I did have one question, but I know it's late, but it's an easy question. I have a mount for my microphone in the mobile, and I've tried the white tape, I've tried the gray tape, I've tried the foam back tape. None of them seem to want to stick to the plastic panel in my new car. Any suggestions?
Yes, it's your problem is not your tape. Okay, I'll now tell you the answer. There's something, silicone-based, essentially like Armorall, that's been applied to your plastic. And until that is worn through, removed, scraped off, whatever, everything will pop off endlessly. It's very, very difficult to deal with. New cars of any kind are atrocious for getting that problem straightened out. So that is your problem. What I've had to do in some cases, I've actually taken the extreme of taking a fingerful of Comet and making a really gooey paste and applying it with a scrunchie. yes, with a scrunchie, you've embedded the scrunchie, and clear off the space, rinse it really, really well. And even then, I've had to do two or three applications of the foam, specifically TruLock, 3M TruLock strips that Radio Shack often sells. I've had to do it two, three times before I could actually get it to stick. But once I do that, it's all good. Okay, any more on that, Rachel?
This is Alpha Juliet 4, Whiskey Delta Mobile. I'm sorry, Gordon, I didn't catch most of what you said there. I'm either in a bad location or just I've got a problem reaching the repeater.
Tell you what, I'll be on the repeater in about 5 or 10 minutes and I'll repeat the answer again. I have to take a quick errand run. No problem, Rachel. Your problem is addressable. I'll leave it at that for now. Anybody else have any comments or questions or additions to what I offered? Anything else people want to bring up? Alrighty. Well, I want to thank everybody for checking in tonight. This has been fun. We try to keep our nets to about an hour. If we go over, that's great. But I think tonight we'll settle for the hour. I got comments earlier in the evening that people feel the net starts too late. Well, I'm wondering if those same people check into the 10-meter net or the Wednesday night net. I know at least in one case they don't, but I can't speak to the others. But anyway, I wish everybody well, and have a great evening. And again, thank you for your support over these 5 years, and we look forward to seeing you next week on Thursday. This is KTBAR W2TTT, signing clear, and thanking everybody.
W2TTT.
W2TTT-AJ4WD Mobile.
This is Rachel. Sorry it took a little longer than I expected to get our frequency.
Get rid of that background. There we go.
So, if you didn't get the answer to the question, I'll be happy to repeat it at this point. I had to go out and do an errand. So thank you for your patience and faith. Didn't want to leave you in a lurch, but I had to get out.
I understand. Let me give you a little bit of background. I've used alcohol because that's what the one tape glue recommended. Then I used some acetone, and that seemed to have worked because it stuck all winter, but now we've got the warm weather, it fell off. So I'm thinking there might be something impregnated in the plastic.
I'm sorry, Rachel. I'm having radio power problems. Let's try that again.
Okay, what I was saying is when I first tried this, I used the white tape foam that came with the clip for the microphone, and it would not stick at all. It just kept falling off. Before I put it on, I had used the alcohol as they recommended to clean the surface. So then I went to using the gray stuff that's made for industrial outdoor exterior. And before I put that on, I cleaned it with some acetone. And that seemed to have worked because from November till now, it's stayed. However, today, because of the warm weather, it just let go. So I'm thinking there might be something impregnated in the plastic that's causing the tape to let go. Back to you.
Okay. So the good news, the second time you stated the question, you gave a little more information, and that helps. What the problem is, in a word, is some silicone-based variant on Armorall on steroids, and probably multiple applications, is on that plastic, and that undermines things. Now, in this case, the adhesive that you used all winter probably was sufficient, but the issue is that you probably have some residual stuff on there, plus the specific of the adhesive of the material you're using this time is probably just not good. I find that the only thermally stable stuff out there is the clear adhesive that's used on the back of Scotch TruLock. That clear stuff, well, it comes in black too. It comes in lots of colors actually, but you know the stuff that Radio Shack sells in strips for a ridiculous amount of money for a small quantity? You may have to apply it several times before it sticks. You might have to try several different strips before it finally clears up, but clear up the surface as best you can. What I do when I want to use that stuff on automotive surfaces is what I take a little paste of Ajax or Comet on a scrunchie and just go to town where I need to apply it, and I break through all that silicone stuff. I sometimes, not always, but sometimes end up scuffing the underlying surface. And then I clean that up with just regular water and apply the TruLock. Sometimes it takes two, occasionally three different strips before it finally bonds. But once it does, it will be thermally stable even in the most absurd of temperatures.
Okay, I'll take a look at that, give that a shot. Stuff that I use is the 3M, the gray tape. I have used that in the past and not an issue. I'm just wondering, so I'll give that TruLock a try. Thank you.
Yeah, well, you'll have pure false starts with any material if you prepare the surface. And the real trick is getting all of the silicone-based product off of that plastic and down to base material. If you can scuff it up even a little bit, that's not bad, but it may look aesthetically displeasing. But I'm assuming you're not leasing this thing, and I'm assuming that you're not planning to get rid of it in 2 years. So what the heck? It's your car. Enjoy it. If you are going to get it 2 years, if it's your car, the hell with it. You know, make it work for you. It's like people not wanting to drill a hole in the body of a car because it might, you know, lower the resale value. Going, how many years are you going to drive this thing? Divide that by how many months and ask yourself, is it worth that much money per month? If yes, hey, and, you know, go to town with the hole punch. You know what I'm saying?
Roger that. Okay, I am at my QTH, so I'm going to say 73. Have a good night. HA4WD will be clear.
Rachel, good luck. Let me know how it works. Kind of curious, but I'm looking at pieces of TruLock that are sitting on my dashboard on top where the sun shines. I've been there for years, and I can remember that first couple of applications were ridiculous. It was just, I was going through this nightmare until I realized what was going on. HA4WD, W2TTT Mobile.
Thank you.